Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday the 15th of August, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about the Masters of Public Administration program at the University of Alaska Southeast. J.C. Polson will be here to highlight back-to-school activities at the Nugget Mall. We'll learn about Friday's fundraiser to help children afflicted with vascular anomalies. Jeremy Johnson will be here to talk about Juneau Gamers, and we'll get a preview of Marion Call's weekend performances at the Brookery. At Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, increasing clouds with low temperatures around 52 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 62 degrees. Forecast for Thursday night looks like increasing clouds with high temperatures around 51 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is taking public comment on proposed legislation that would affect the Bay Indian Act. A tribal consultation was held Tuesday in New Mexico. Tristan Autone has more.
Passed in 1910, the Bay Indian Act gives authority to the BIA and Indian Health Service to give preference in the purchase of supplies, services, and construction to Native-owned companies. However, since the Act's passage, there have been no regulations to guide the Act. Tom Muma is a contract specialist with the BIA.
It's policy of the federal government to set aside contracts as much as we can to small businesses. So when we're doing a simplified procurement, it's generally assumed to be set aside for a small business. So that's why we're setting them aside for small Indian-owned businesses.
Under draft regulations proposed by the BIA, uniform policies and procedures would be established for contracting officers. The rules would also differentiate between large and small Indian-owned businesses, like those owned by a tribe or those owned by Indian individuals, as well as reducing the ownership of what's considered an Indian-owned business from 100% ownership to 51% ownership. Public comment on the proposed Bay Indian regulations are open until September 24th, and officials hope to have rules on the books by the end of the year. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The Council for Native American Farming and Ranching meets for the first time. The council is made up of farmers, ranchers, tribal leaders, and USDA officials. They'll advise the Secretary of Agriculture and address issues Native farmers and ranchers face. Janie Hipp is the senior advisor to the Secretary for Tribal Relations and a member of the council. Hipp says one of the greatest challenges Native farmers and ranchers face is land tenure, the nature of ownership of land. She says this is unique to Indian country and often needs collaboration between the USDA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, tribal governments, individuals, and other entities.
When you're trying to do this on reservations that have perhaps checkerboard sorts of land ownership patterns, then it's just very important that those unique needs of Indian country are just a part of our day-to-day operation in USDA so that we can do a better job of working with Indian country on farming and ranching and food.
Hipp says census numbers show Native American farming and ranching is on the rise. And she says statistics show agriculture is the second largest employer in Indian country. The council was established as part of the Keeps Eagle settlement. A lawsuit claimed the USDA discriminated against Native Americans by denying them equal access to credit in the USDA Farm Loan Program. The council is wrapping up 2 days of public meetings today in Washington, D.C. A Native American summit is taking place in Salt Lake City, Utah. Tribal leaders, local, state, and federal officials are among the attendees. The two-day gathering is hosted by Utah's governor and lieutenant governor. Participants are addressing issues in education, economic development, housing, and health. Today's agenda includes a private meeting between Governor Gary Herbert and tribal leaders. The governor and a tribe are reportedly expected to sign a water rights deal. The Hualapai Nation in Arizona is being featured in a national television show. The TV series Top Chef Masters is featuring the Hualapai and Grand Canyon West. In episode 4 in season 4, the chefs take ordinary salad bar ingredients and make them pop for music legends, the B-52s. Then the chefs take a trip to the Grand Canyon for a cookout. They'll cook for the Hualapai tribe using ingredients from the tribe's sacred land. The show is scheduled to air tonight on the Bravo Network. During this month annually, the Santa Fe Indian Market is held in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The market began more than 90 years ago and featured work by Native American artisans and craftsmen. It has evolved to include additional events like a Native cinema showcase and live music and dances. Hundreds of thousands of people are drawn to the market from around the world, contributing millions of dollars to the local economy. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are attuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are Kathy DiLorenzo and Lindsay Docterman, both professors of public administration at the University of Alaska Southeast, here to talk about the program itself. Kathy and Lindsay, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
So first of all, could you give a little bit about your background, Kathy?
My background, yes. I came to Juneau about 7 years ago to actually teach in the public administration program. It's what brought me to Alaska. I come from Idaho, mostly, but all across the Pacific Northwest growing up, and I did my degrees, my Bachelor of Political Science, my Master of Public Administration, and my Doctorate in Political Science at Idaho State University. And I always say coming to Alaska has made me realize that I was an Idaho girl, an Alaska girl trapped in an Idaho girl's body. I believe I was born to be here. I love Alaska, and I love teaching in this program and helping people who serve the state of Alaska. So it's been a wonderful kind of journey for me.
And Lindsay Docterman, this is your first year. You're taking over for Jonathan Anderson.
Yes, as in this role, I was actually here the year before last in a term position as the assistant professor of economics. And before that, I was doing research in Sweden, southern Sweden. And before that, I was teaching at Massey University in New Zealand. And before that, I finally graduated with my PhD in natural resource and environmental economics from Colorado State University. But I'm originally from South Dakota. I've been coming up to Alaska for the last 7 or 8 years visiting family, and I finally just decided it was a place I needed to stop visiting and start living in. So I'm excited to be here until further notice.
All right. Well, let us know when you're tired of it, okay?
Oh, yeah. I hate the heat.
You're welcome to Juneau. You're perfect. Can you describe the Masters of Public Administration program in a nutshell?
Sure, and thanks for having us on here today. We've got some really exciting things going on in our program, and it's great to be able to talk about them. The Master of Public Administration degree is a general master's management and administration degree for those working in the public sector, whether it be city or municipal government, state government, federal government, tribal government, and also the nonprofit sector. We have a wonderful curriculum that spans everything from administrative law, how do we deal with policies in our environment, to organizational structure and behavior, things like communication, leadership, motivation, human resource management, program evaluation, because evaluating programs is a critical issue of whether we're successful or not, and how do we understand how to do that in a positive and meaningful way. We also have courses in financial management and budgeting, and that rounds out our core curriculum. We love offering courses in leadership. We feel it's so critical to public administrators and how they operate in the environment and are able to be successful in delivering services and programs to people in a democracy. We also are very proud to be an Alaskan-focused program and to serve the state of Alaska and Southeast Alaska in particular. We believe that government is the most visible, or public administrators are the most visible part of government, and they do the work of government. And so everybody who's a public servant or a public administrator, a manager of a nonprofit, they're out there every day serving the public and trying to bring services and programs to people in a meaningful way to make an impact. And how we do that is a very difficult process. And so we're here to help guide people through theory and practice and how they can interact the two in order to be able to serve the people who they're charged to serve. And we also are excited to, first of all, we're very excited to have Dr. Men with us. We think it sounds kind of like a public administrator superhero name, which we're going to dub her that and put a little cape on her for all of our advertising. But she is wonderful, and we are just excited to bring her on with us. She has taught for the university before. Some of our students had taken her classes as her econ classes as prerequisites, and she is an amazing teacher, a wonderful researcher, and we're hoping to get her involved directly with students in researching issues, big issues in public administration and government in Alaska. So we're very pleased to be able to announce her as our new assistant professor of public administration. One other thing that we also have going on that helps to kind of understand what we do is we just rolled out a brand new concentration in our MPA program in natural resource management, and it's one that we grew ourselves, and we have a wonderful cadre of adjunct faculty as well as Dr. Doctorman, who will be able to help us to deliver that. And what it is being able to understand policies and management issues in terms of natural resources for the state of Alaska and the Yukon Territory. We offer classes such as adaptive management, energy and environment, and of course our wonderful class of local and global sustainability, which we're offering this fall for anyone who is interested in learning more about management and policies in natural resource areas.
What kind of person goes for an MPA degree?
Many. The public sector is vast and it spans every discipline, and there's a lot of different people who are under this umbrella. State people who work for the state government, like I said, or the city government, maybe local or federal or tribal government, people in mid-level. It's not restricted to anyone. It's really to people in mid-level management positions who are looking to advance their careers to maybe upper-level management positions, more positions of leadership within an organization, but also the most important part of organizations, which is the people who we lovingly call the street-level bureaucrats. And we don't say bureaucrat is a bad word. Bureaucrat is a very good word in our program because, again, they do the work of government. They're the ones that interact with the people the most, and so anybody from an entry-level position to a mid-level management position would benefit from coming into our program and trying to and getting education to help them to understand the strategic perspective of an organization, not just a task-oriented function of what we do at our desks every day, moving paper across and getting problems off our desk. But how do you look at an organization as a holistic unit? How do you look at it in a strategic perspective to understand how you hire somebody is affected by the structure that you build within the organization, and how somebody is motivated can be affected by the way in which we create our policies and how we are able to advance people, how we're able to, you know, budgets are about priorities. That's what they're about. And how do we make ourselves a priority in a time when the pie is getting smaller and more people are coming to the table for a piece of the pie? So how do you make yourself visible as an organization, and how do you make yourself a priority for those that are determining the funding? And so it's anyone within an organization. We don't believe in top-down management. We believe in a holistic approach where the people at the bottom and the people at the top and all the people in the middle contribute something that very important to the organization. And so how do we get this education to people to help them to understand that they have a part to play in this?
Here, Kathy, could you describe some of the problems that many people have when they're being managers?
Sure. There's a lot of difficult issues in being in a managerial position or even within an organization. Things like, how do we motivate people within the public sector? It's not like the private sector where we're able to just give bonuses or compensation if people do a good job. It's more of an intrinsic approach to motivating people that they're doing a good job, that they mean something within an organization, that the job that they're doing is really making an impact and a difference within their community. And so how do we, as managers, and how do we as people in an organization understand how we get the most out of our employees in a position where maybe we don't have the ability to give them money that compensates them or bonuses that do? Budgets, again, how we make ourselves a priority, how we understand, how we evaluate programs in order to determine whether they're successful, whether they're meaningful, whether we are achieving the goals and the outcomes that we set for our programs. Well, first of all, defining what those goals and outcomes are, because defining what that is very important. And then how do we measure what we're doing in order to determine whether we're successful? And that is being asked more and more of everyone in organizations, especially in the public sector, to really demonstrate that you are being, that you're successful in achieving your goals and meeting your priorities and goals. So how do we get help people to understand how they can meaningfully approach measuring the success of their initiatives and organizations? So those are just a few of the very big problems of public administration that we try to tackle.
What are some of the prerequisites of joining the program, and also how long does it usually take people?
Yeah, so the prerequisites of the program at this point are you need to have basically completed successfully completed an introductory statistics course for our research methods class, and then also a macroeconomics course for our economics of public policy class. Those are course prerequisites, and so you can enter into the program. You can be admitted to the MPA program at UAS without those prerequisites, and then satisfy those prior to going into those courses, which are more at the end of the degree. You have to have a completed bachelor's degree to come into a master's program, so that is another prerequisite to our program. As for how long it takes somebody to complete the program, we're flexible. We have a 2-year program and a 4-year program. Many of our students are on a 4-year program. They take one class at a time, and they finish in 4 years. And we do that because we give students information about how much of a commitment this will be and the responsibility that goes along with being in a master's program. Then we have them take a look at their lives and their professional lives, their personal lives, and what do they want? How can they approach this degree in the time that they have to give to an educational program that will mean that they are successful in completing the program? So we are flexible. We allow students to work through at their pace. About half our students or over half our students are on the 4-year plan. It sounds like a long time because you think, when am I going to get done so I can apply this degree program? But that is just not the case in our program. We're what's called a practitioner-oriented program. We encourage students to use their organizations, use the things the organizations they either work for or volunteer for, to apply the concepts and theories and information that they're learning in the class. Apply it right away. It's like their little working laboratory that they get to try things out where they wouldn't get to in their working environment. And so they're applying it every day. And one of my favorite things that students say is, what I learned on Thursday night, I was able to apply Friday morning in my organization. So it doesn't seem like it takes 4 years to get through, because you're applying it as you go along all the time. So it's a wonderful practitioner-oriented program in that way. If I could, one more thing. We're a distance-delivered program, but we meet once a week in various distance technologies. And so students are in class with other public administrators across the state of Alaska. We like to go to the communities where public administrators live and work. We like to bring the education to them so they don't have to leave their communities in order to bring that valuable knowledge back to the communities that they love and they want to stay and serve. So people who are in our classes are interacting with public administrators all across the state of Alaska and the Yukon Territory who has similar issues. And we're really working to create a network of public administrators across the state of Alaska who are ready to hit the ground running to serve the state of Alaska in the very big issues that we have.
Dr. Docterman, that is kind of fun to say. Anything else you'd like to add?
I did promise. UAS is very lucky this year. They get 2 economists, not only myself, but they've hired a tenure-track faculty, Dr. Brian Vandernold, to teach economics as well, and I promise to plug his class, which is Natural Resource Economics, Econ 435, at 8 a.m. Mondays and Wednesdays. He only has 2 people, so he needs more hecklers.
All right, Kathy DeLorenzo and Lindsay Docterman, thank you very much for coming down the station and talking about the Masters of Public Administration program. If they need more information, how do they get that?
If they need more information, they can call our office at 796-6409. They can ask for me, or somebody at the front desk will be able to help them. We also are on the web at the UAS website at www.uas.alaska.edu SOM/MPA. And please get a hold of us. We would love to speak to you about how we can help you to be a better public administrator in the state of Alaska.
All right, thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 15th of August, 2012. Birthday of the Swedish novelist Stieg Larsson, born in Skelleftehamn, Sweden, 1954. Took up fiction writing as a way to make some extra money. Started in 2001. He'd written two novels, started on a third when he approached an editor. He was planning 10 detective thrillers called the Millennium Series, but he died of a heart attack the following year. His three novels published posthumously. The first, in Swedish, is called Men Who Hate Women, better known as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's the birthday of Mary Jo Salter, Grand Rapids, Michigan, 1954, went off to Harvard, took a poetry class from Elizabeth Bishop. She's published several poetry collections. Once asked what she would be if she weren't a poet, she said, "I'm a writer because I'm not a composer. That's what I'd really love to be, a composer of long, complex symphonies and operas, to produce the wordless power of music to move people in that way. I'm stuck with being better at words." It's the birthday of the essayist Thomas De Quincey, Manchester, England, 1785. He was fluent in Greek as a young man, moved to the Lake District, became a friend of Wordsworth and Coleridge, and then in 1813 he became addicted to opium. Chronically in debt, had to take a job writing articles for magazines, but he's best remembered for his book Confessions of an English Opium Eater. It was on this date, 1935, the humorist Will Rogers and his friend and pilot Wiley Post died in a plane crash, flying from Fairbanks, Alaska to Point Barrow. Post was flying a plane that he had cobbled together from parts of two different planes. Lockheed, the plane manufacturer, had warned him that the plane could be unsafe. It was hard to control. The nose tended to dip down. And when Post took off from a lagoon, the engine stalled when they were just 50 feet in the air. The plane's nose dropped, and both men died instantly. It was on this date, 1843, the Tivoli Gardens opened in Copenhagen, the second oldest amusement park in the world. The oldest is in Klampenborg, near Copenhagen. Designed as a pleasure garden with flowers, cafes, theaters, and bandstands, in 1943, Nazi sympathizers burned most of the buildings to the ground, and it had to be rebuilt. A few years ago, Tivoli Gardens became the first amusement park to operate entirely on wind-generated power. And it's the birthday of Denise Chavez, born in Las Cruces, New Mexico, 1948. Her first novel was Face of an Angel, came out in 1994. The protagonist is a waitress, and Chavez herself had spent more than 30 years waiting on tables. And it's the birthday of the man who gave us the phrase, "Blood is thicker than water," and "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive," the novelist Sir Walter Scott, Edinburgh, 1771. Here's a poem for today by Dorothy Parker entitled Penelope. In the pathway of the sun, in the footsteps of the breeze, where the world and sky are one, he shall ride the silver seas, he shall cut the glittering wave. I shall sit at home and rock, rise to heed a neighbor's knock, brew my tea and snip my thread, bleach the linen for my bed. They will call him brave. Penelope, Dorothy Parker, from The Portable Dorothy Parker, published by Penguin, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:24 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Sam Jordan here to talk about a Friday fundraiser for children with vascular anomalies at the Park Shore Condos Clubhouse. Sam, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thanks, Jeff.
So first of all, what is a vascular anomaly?
Vascular anomalies are kind of a set of tumors that can form on children. They usually form on the upper layer of the skin and can kind of be all over the body, just depending on how they develop. And some are small and are not a big impact, and people would probably just call them birthmarks. But there are some cases that these vascular tumors become very, very large and can really be medically impacting for children. They usually form in the first, 6 months of life, so they can be really impacting on a child who's developing during that time.
How common are they?
About one in every 60 or 70 children will get some form of vascular anomaly.
How long do they last?
They can last well into teenage years. Sometimes they recede. Oftentimes, if it's a really big vascular tumor, it's something that's you're gonna be able to see it. Oftentimes, into the rest of somebody's life.
What kind of treatment options are there?
There are quite a few treatment options. There's the wait and see option where sometimes things will recede. But for children who have more medically impacting vascular anomalies, a lot of surgical procedures have been developed just in the last 15 years in order to extract those tumors off of the skin and then do the repair on the skin so that children are able to have, normal facial structure or normal body structure.
I imagine the treatments cost a little bit of money.
They do, yeah. They cost quite a bit. And for many families who have insurance, insurance will sometimes cover parts of it, pieces of it. For families who don't have insurance, these surgeries can run well into the tens of thousands of dollars, and they often require multiple surgeries. So it's a course of treatment that at the end of it can be maybe $50,000-$60,000.
Can you describe Friday's event, please?
We're going to start at 6:30 at the Park Shore Condo Clubhouse. We've got a group of musicians called Flutatious who are going to come and entertain. It's a trio of flute players. They very graciously donated their time. And then we're going to have a dessert auction going during that where people can bid on different desserts. And we've had quite a bit of help from family members and friends, as well as some of the community businesses. Pie in the Sky has donated one of their pies. Costco's donated some of their pastries, and we have a few others who are going to hopefully donate. And then we're going to give a short presentation about what vascular anomalies are, and we're going to talk about the doctor who assisted our family. My daughter is a child who was born with a vascular anomaly. We're going to talk about that doctor's work. He does most of his work out of New York City and works with kids from all over the world.
Is there a support group in Juneau?
There's not a support group in Juneau that I know about.
Maybe this might be an opportunity for people to get together with their concerns too.
Yeah, with one out of 60 kids who are affected. I mean, we often see folks in the community who have children with a vascular anomaly.
And if people can't make it to Friday's event, are there other ways they can contribute?
One of the best ways is just to engage right with the Wainers Kids Vascular Anomaly Foundation, or Wainers Children's Vascular Anomaly Foundation. There's a website. It's WainersKids.org, WainersKids.org. And it has a lot of information for families who may be looking for information about this, as well as an opportunity to donate right there on the website.
Sam Jordan, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I wanted to also just let folks know that one of the components of our service here is we've reached out to different pediatricians in the town and provided them with information. So if you have a child who may have one of these, you know, please talk to your pediatrician. There's a lot of treatment options out there, and there's a lot of good information in the last few years available to you, and you should have a good sense of the options available as you move forward with treatment.
Is there a phone number people could call for more information?
Not at this time.
All right, Sam Jordan, thank you very much for coming down to the station talking about Friday's fundraiser. It starts at 6:30, is that right? The Park Shore Condo Clubhouse.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
Helping Southeast families and businesses with deposit and investment accounts, online banking, and cash management services. More information at AlaskaPacificBank.com. Member FDIC.
Time is 3:33, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau, where our next guest on a Juneau afternoon is Stacy Polson from the Nugget Mall here to talk about back-to-school activities. Stacy, thank you for coming down to the station today.
No, thank you for having me.
So back-to-school days are the second biggest shopping time of the year other than the holidays. How are people getting ready at the mall?
Well, the merchants are offering a back-to-school special. If you buy $15 or more at their stores, then you get a free back-to-school gift at participating merchants. And we are going to have a back-to-school fair on August 18th from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m.
And what's going on at the fair?
Well, Vaccinate Juneau Kids Coalition is going to be there with their teddy bear clinic. They're offering immunizations and TB tests. You need to bring your shot records. There will also be the Garnet School, Raven Correspondence School, Big Brothers Big Sisters, and of course Juneau School District is going to be there with information about bus schedules, rally, early registration, although it's school starts on the 20th, so I don't know how early that is, but Civil Air Patrol will be there. CBJ will be there with Parks and Recs for their youth sports registrations. UAS will be there. And this year, the State Museum is going to be offering a table. They have resources available for kids, and they're free, so they're going to have information about that at their table. There'll be games, popcorn, and we're going to have door prizes, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Is it all happening this weekend?
This weekend, August 18th, from 11 until 4 p.m.
And are there activities at the mall coming up?
Yeah, we have our Community Service Day and Meet the Candidates Day. That's going to be September 8th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. So this is a great chance for community service groups to let Juneau residents know who they are and what they have to offer. And we're inviting any candidates and also interest groups, ballot measures, whatever, on the Meet the Candidates Day. So it's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Registration forms for both of these events are available at the mall office, or you could go onto our website. That's nuggetmalljuneau.com.
Do you have a phone number people can call?
789-4439. That's my office phone number.
All right, Stacey Poulsen, anything else you'd like to add?
We also have arts and crafts fairs coming up. Our first one is in September. We have two in November and one in December. They're already filling up. So if you're interested in being a vendor at these fairs, you'll need to come by the office and pick up a registration form as soon as you can.
All right, Stacey, that phone number one more time and the website?
789-4439, and our website is nuggetmalljuneau.com, and you can also register online.
All right, Stacey Poulsen, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I got to know, got to find out today. Can anybody tell me? Can anybody say what is cool? Cool in school. What is cool? Cool in school. I got to know. Can anybody show me what is cool? What is cool? I gotta be cool. I gotta be hip. So the teachers and the kids don't give me any lip. What is cool? What is cool? Cool in school. I got to know. Can anybody show me what is cool? What is cool? Is it the way you tie your shoes?
I don't know.
The way you comb your hair?
I don't know.
The superheroes hiding on your underwear?
What is cool?
What is cool?
What is cool?
Cool in school. Cool in school.
What is
cool? I'm gonna pray that somebody can say what is cool. What is cool? Well, I asked somebody, this is what he said. You got to wear your shirt backwards, smear jelly on your head. I did what he told me. But when I got to school, my best friend came and said, you like a fool. I don't want to be a fool. So I asked Terry, she asked Joe. Joe, well, he asked Larry, but, you know, it seems that nobody knows what is cool. What is cool? Cool in school. Cool in school. Well, I'm wearing my mind out, cause I can't find out what is cool. What is cool? Now is it the way you tie your shoes? The way you comb your hair? The superheroes hiding on your underwear?
What is cool?
Cool in school.
What is cool?
Cool in school.
Well,
I got to know. Can anybody show me what is cool?
Cool
in school. Well, listen. Everybody tells me I got to be cool. From now on I'll do just what I want to do. I'll be cool. Cool in school. I'll be cool. So cool in school. I'll decide for myself. Nobody else. What is cool? Cool in school.
Alright, now let me see you here. Put this left shoe on the right foot. I guess it means I gotta put the right foot on the left shoe, something like that. And then, let me see, I'll take the shirt off and put it on the other way. I'll put the pants on backwards. Look at this tie. All right, I'm gonna put this tie. guy there. There on my knee. Maybe I'll put my hair that way. Maybe I'll try this way. That's good. All right. Okay.
Support for KTOO comes from GCI Wireless, providing digital wireless service to Juneau throughout Southeast Alaska and beyond, on the web at gci.com.
Clint Farr believes March is a great time to buy winter clothes online. Since spring begins in much of the lower 48, winter clothing is dramatically reduced by national retailers. For those lucky enough to live in Juneau, you can still get two more good months out of the new stuff, or just wear it right on through the next fall, depending on the summer. Here's Clint.
You totally psyched me out with that.
Was I going? No. Yes? Okay.
How to follow up that? Oh, my God. This is a love story of sorts I'm going to tell, a bit of a love story. Our family has a new girl. A new girl has joined our family, and we couldn't be happier. She is sweet. She has big brown eyes. She has a wonderful disposition. She loves to cuddle. She licks my hand. She's a dog. And so this is our family's most recent transition. It's a transition to pet ownership, more specifically, dog ownership. And I don't want to offend the cat lovers here necessarily, but I'm going to. Why? Why? Because here's the thing with a cat. A cat wants to kill you. It's true. A cat sits on the banister. They sit at head level. They look at you. They stare at you. And their tail twitches. And they're staring at you. And they're staring at you. And they keep staring at you. And in your mind, and in their mind, you think, God, they must sound like Clint Eastwood. They're like, if I were only 60 pounds heavier, I'd take you. And it's true. You know, I don't want that. I want an animal. Like, if I don't want an animal that wants to eat me. Okay? It's true. Because if I keel over with a heart attack in my kitchen, which the men in my family are wont to do, I don't want the cat to eat my face off before my wife gets home. And it's true. That's what happens. Old lady, it's true. I saw it on the internet. An old lady dies in a house full of cats, and by the time they find her, she's got no nose, her ears are missing, and she has no lips. I don't want that. I don't want that, okay? I want a dog that's going to stand sentinel next to my corpse, maybe lick my cheek at most to see if I'm still napping, bark at passerbys. What's that girl? Your master died of a myocardial infarction? Call 911? You know, that's what I want. The idea of I don't want to be a lipless corpse. I don't want a closed casket. I want a dog. And so we got Sadie. So Sadie's our dog, and she is a sweet dog, and she interacts with the children, my two daughters. They cuddle up at bedtime at night, and it's unleashed my youngest daughter's inner dictator. Go, sit, stay, come, go! And it's amazing, but they're learning that they are impacting the happiness of another being, a dog. And so they're learning empathy, and I think that's essential to growing up, you know, that big, fat transition that we all go through of growing up. What was next? You know, I brought, because I have the memory of a Rolodex, I have this next bit here. Hold on. See, I had a dog growing up. It was a collie, and she looked like that TV show dog, Lassie. And as it so happened, I was 6 at the time, and Lassie was my favorite show, and Dad made the mistake of allowing me to name the dog, Lassie! Oh, my brother, who's 12 at the time, really much smarter, more competent than me, and very hip for the rural South, was like, no! And in hindsight, it is true, it's kind of embarrassing that you name your collie Lassie. I mean, couldn't I have been more original? I mean, I hate cliches. I get mad at Sadie when she pees on a fire hydrant. You know, like, come on. But the thing is, here I go, losing my space again. Peeing on a fire hydrant. It's terrible. Memory. I had this totally memorized earlier. Anyways, even my wife, as I prepared the piece, was like, "You named your collie Lassie." So the thing about Lassie was that she was my buddy. She was a sweet dog. She lived up to the name Lassie. She was super smart. Now, she wasn't like she was paraphrased by other people when she barked. What's that girl? Timmy fell down the well, broke a clavicle. You know, it wasn't like that, but she was super smart. And she was loyal. And she took care of me. Like, I was sick for 2 weeks, and she stayed by my side. She sat sentinel next to me, and I would pet her and then fall back asleep. And I remember that. That dog was there every time I came out. And she was soulful. She loved to dance. She was a tall dog, and she could put her paws over my shoulder, and we could dance. We could slow dance, and we'd go to the yard. Now, my dad didn't like that, but I think it's every child's solemn duty to spoil their dog, you know, and she was my buddy. So we danced. And then she was my buddy. And then one day, I came home as a freshman in high school, and I came home. And I looked out, it was the second floor of the house, and looked in the backyard, and I saw Lassie just walking, shuffling in a circle, very slowly and gasping. And I went outside, and I went down the porch steps, and I sat down on the bottom step, and she came over to me and it just, you know, looked up at me with these big brown eyes, and she put her head into my lap, and I was just petting her, and she was gasping, 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 and I could see that her gums were china white. You know, she just wasn't getting any oxygen, I suppose. And I was just petting her, and you know, this is a time before cell phones. I wasn't going to leave her. I'd be damned if I was going to leave her. So I just sat there with my dog, and she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I just petted her. And Dad came home about an hour later. We took her to the vet, and she died that night. She died that night. Cancer collapsed her lung. And and now she slow dances with the angels. And I can say this. My transition to adulthood began with her end. And so There's coffee cup wisdom about dogs. You know, the kind of thing you get in an email from your grandmother. You know, that's true. You know, the thing about, you know, rise early, you know, play hard, eat with gusto, growl when don't bite when a growl will do. You remember that. You know, but that sort of wisdom comes in handy when you consider the transitions, the difficult transition to adulthood. You know, I think that anytime you learn something, anytime you realize something, you grow up a little bit. And what is growing up but just a series of realizations? And that dog wisdom, if you will, can come in handy. It can help you through those trying times. Like the crushing, reality-shifting realization of your father's mortality when you come upon your dad in a Providence cardiac care unit hooked up to a pinging machine. Right? That, you know, there the wisdom is just sit close by and be quiet. And the realization complete trust in someone is not that scary if the person that you trust or that trust is rooted in the love of a woman who is smarter, more competent, and relatively better good-looking than you. And the final, you know, for me, the biggest realization, revelation, is the boundless love of being a father to two girls whose hugs are so strong you can hardly breathe. And now that I am a father, I can introduce my daughters to that simple, noble love of a dog so that in their own difficult transitions to adulthood, when times are low and people are confusing, they can remember Sadie and draw some comfort and maybe even some wisdom. You know, run romp and play daily. Be loyal. And when a loved one is sick, sit close by, quietly. Hey, did you guys hear that? Was that girl? It's time for me to end my discourse on the topic of transitions. I've used up my 420 seconds. Wait, how you doing, girl? Yeah? I'm sure they waltz very well. I miss you. I miss you, Lassie.
This Clint Farr recorded live at the Mud Rooms event last March. Time is 3:53, and you are tuned into KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our next guest is Jeremy Johnson. He's going to open up a new business in town called Juneau Gamers. We're having their open house Saturday from 12 to 4. Jeremy, thank you very much for being on the show with us today.
Happy to be back.
So what is a gamer?
Well, in this case, a gamer is going to be your tabletop gamer, the kind of person that likes to roll dice or use pencils or have a big stack of cards in front of them, that kind of thing.
What kind of games are we talking about? Name some names.
There's like Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, Magic the Gathering's pretty popular. Tonight we're doing a demo for Last Night on Earth, a zombie apocalypse board game. Things are generally involving a tabletop. So the Pathfinder game is based on Dungeons and Dragons. Uses a lot of dice and fundamental mechanics that are all part of similar gaming constructs.
How many gamers are in Juneau? Do you know?
I estimate about 50 to 100. We have about 30 to 40 that cycle through. And then we do weekend tournaments now for Magic the Gathering, and there's a strong 20 show up for that.
Where's Juno Gamers located?
We're over in the Space Unlimited Plaza. That's across the street from the relatively new Breeze Inn. It's at 5750 Glacier Highway.
What kind of things do you stock? Dice?
Yeah, we stock dice. Well, and the dice bags, for that matter. But Magic the Gathering, Paizo Publishing materials, that's going to be like Pathfinder and D&D type stuff. We stock paints, miniatures, modeling kits, things that you can use to shape out the miniatures. We're working with Games Workshop to get Warhammer 40K in town. I think there's about 10 to 15 solid players that are interested. We've got one guy who's ready to do a painting and modeling demonstration probably next month. And let's see, I got some kind of nerdy t-shirts, you know. I'm into the zombie apocalypse, so I've got one that says, if zombies chase us, I'm tripping you, you know, things like that.
No, and I mentioned dice. I imagine the end user in the dice bags. How many accoutrements out there that solid gamers own? It's not just regular dice. It's
the core polyhedron, the cube, a pyramid that's got a square base. That would be like the four-sided die. And then there's the decahedron, the 10-sided die, I guess the icosahedron, dodecahedron. Those are like D12, 12-sided die and 20-sided die. Those are basically a way to mix it up, get away from your standard cube D6. You know, people are pretty used to dice in most board games being like roll 2D6 like craps if your common Parker Brothers kind of game and stuff like that. We don't carry Parker Brothers, but we carry other family-oriented games that are similarly done. Pretty soon we'll be carrying Asmodee Kids games, which have things like sticky sticks instead of pickup sticks. They're sticky sticks, things like that. It's kind of interesting.
What's the cost to be a gamer? Is it an expensive hobby?
It depends on your genre. I think that the average board game is going to be between $50 and $80 to have one board game that runs about 3 to 6 hours of gameplay. But some of the games are more spendy than others. Like the Games Workshop armies, you buy units at a time or small squadrons. But with like Pathfinder, you could be happy with just some dice if you have a good game runner, somebody who's going to be the game master. You know, I would say that the core book or the core cost for somebody that's just wanting to start up gaming and kind of do it casually is about $100. That would be $50 for the rule book, some dice, a dice bag. Maybe they want to have a play mat or a zone or something like that for themselves. But I think the average is around $50 to $100.
And Juno Gamers, again, is located where?
5750 Glacier Highway. That's basically next to Subway in the Space Unlimited Plaza. Soon we'll have some big signage and such. But for right now, we are happy to be 6 months ahead of schedule for opening the shop. And we're definitely happy to invite the community in this weekend.
Do you have a website?
We do. It's junogamers.com. And you can also find us on Facebook. I think it's Facebook/JunoGamers. We have a strong Magic the Gathering following that keeps its attention there, and a few other regular attendees. Like there's a regular Paizo group that gets together. They do the Pathfinder, Dungeons & Dragons style stuff.
Phone number?
463-GAME. That's 463-GAME. I'd have to look at my little phone to get the enumeration down properly, but I think it's 4263 if I'm just going off the top of my head.
All right, Jeremy Johnson from the Juno Gamers Business. Thank you for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
This weekend's event has got, you know, free food. We're going to have Whack a Night. The Society for Creative Anachronism has donated a night for us to allow the community to beat up. And there'll be some door prizes. We'll give away about 6 door prizes. And that's probably the best of it.
And Jeremy Johnson, thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's just about 4 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast to 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators in the Valley and Ock Bay area. Tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sirsuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. Also live online at www.ktoo.org. Weather forecast for tonight looks like increasing clouds with low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 60 degrees.
I think the decision means that we're almost certainly going to have the Pennsylvania voter ID law in effect for the November elections.
A court victory for new voting requirements in Pennsylvania.
It's Wednesday, August 15th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Supporters of the voter ID law say it prevents fraud. Opponents say it disenfranchises minorities and the poor. Today, a judge ruled the law can go forward.
And can a young vice presidential candidate tap into the youth vote? We'll hear from Paul Ryan's alma mater.
A history professor asks this question: why is there no liberal Ayn Rand?
Also, a vegetable rep.